Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. AI data center development is unlikely to stop, but the rules of engagement are changing. Local opposition, ratepayer concerns, and permitting scrutiny are shifting the debate from whether projects should be built to how costs, benefits, and community impacts should be allocated. Joining me here on Top of the Morning today to talk about these considerations when it comes to data center regulation, we've assembled a wide-ranging team from the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS FSI to talk about these considerations that tie into the recent publication from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Title is The Investment Implications of Data Center Regulation, which is available now for you, our listeners, and our clients on UBS.com/CIO. Joining me here for the conversation today, glad to welcome Kurt Ryman, Head of Fixed Income Americas, Barry McAlinden, Fixed Income Strategist for the Americas, Janine Lennon, Municipal Strategist for the Americas, Jay Dobson, U.S. Energy and Utilities Equity Strategist, and Nathaniel Gabriel, Materials and Industrials Equity Strategist. Kurt, Barry, Janine, Jay, Nathaniel, a great to have you all with us today. Thank you for dropping by to share some insights into this top-of-mind topic, that being the build-out of data centers and what's involved. A lot to get to today, so Kurt, to set the stage a bit, we have witnessed instances of backlash or resistance amongst the public when it comes to the build-out of data centers across communities. Some of our listeners might be familiar with the term NIMBY, or not in my backyard. What factors, Kurt, do you believe are contributing to this resistance?
It's an interesting and rather rapid change of direction. Back in 2022, when ChatGPT launched, excitement was dominating the conversation around AI. We all experimented with the technology. Businesses have come in and even raced to incorporate AI into their products and into their workflows. We see investors that are pouring billions of dollars into the companies that are tied to the AI build-out. But really, over this past year, public opinion has shifted sharply. People continue to adopt AI, but they increasingly worry about where the technology could lead. And that's in poll after poll, showing growing concern about the impact of AI on jobs, cybersecurity, privacy, electricity costs, broader social disruption. And just go through a couple of the numbers because they're striking. A Gallup survey found that 71% of people, to your point about NIMBY, oppose building an AI data center in their local community. Reuters Ipsos, they found that 77% worry that AI will lead to higher electricity prices. And young adults, who you would expect to be the ones that are really embracing the technology, are expressing substantially more concern than excitement about AI. And that's despite growing use. So there's that trend, and then there's the breadth of this backlash, which is, this is like one subject that is uniquely bipartisan. Republicans, Democrats, Independents, they're all expressing concern. Young voters, think about demographics. They worry about the jobs, AI safety, social disruption. Older voters are focused on affordability and electricity costs. So different groups are worrying about different things, but they increasingly share that same unease. And that's where the data center enters the story. For most people, data centers are the physical manifestation of AI. If you think about large language models or model weights or computing clusters, but people notice a massive industrial facility under construction near their homes. They notice the water consumption, the transmission lines. They worry about the electricity bills that could be higher. And they're questioning the tax incentives that some of the largest and highest earning companies in the world are receiving for locating their data centers in these communities. So that's a dynamic, though, that reflects a broader challenge for artificial intelligence. The benefits are distant. They're abstract. People hear about productivity gains, future medical breakthroughs, other scientific discoveries, the potential for higher productivity or stronger economic growth. The costs feel immediate. They are right here, right now, and they're very tangible. So as we argued in this recent report that we wrote, these costs of data centers are local and visible. The benefits, though, remain national, strategic, and they're harder to observe. And that tension creates what we see now as a meaningful political headwind. The companies continue to invest aggressively in the AI infrastructure. The hyperscaler debt issuance is likely to exceed $250 billion this year as companies scramble to secure this new computing power. At the same time, opposition groups have blocked or delayed 75 data center projects, and that's up to $130 billion of planned investment during the first quarter of 2026 alone, which is equal to the total number of affected projects during all of 2025. So what's particularly interesting is that many voters don't react this way to every single energy-intensive or resource-intensive project. Semiconductor fabs, these fabrication plants, they consume enormous amounts of electricity and water. But voters associate these with manufacturing, national security, industrial renewal. Data centers trigger a different reaction because voters view them as the physical embodiment of AI. And AI presents that unique challenge. Some of the loudest warnings are coming not from critics, but from leaders inside the industry. And those warnings make it harder to dismiss the public concern as just resistance to change. So, I guess what I would say here is that we're at a point where we think this data center build-out is going to continue, but it's going to continue on different terms because residents are going to ask tougher questions about who bear the cost and who will capture the benefits. And this is likely going to be, though, even though the data centers will get built out under different terms, maybe in different locations, it's the beginning of a larger conversation about, even though AI may promise productivity gains and scientific breakthroughs and all these other potential benefits, these concerns about employment, cybersecurity, social disruption, that's just beginning, and it's part of a larger conversation about AI regulation, not just here in the U.S. or locally, but even how it'll be governed internationally. Because the benefits are, maybe there, but we're talking about, some longer, more difficult conversations about potential for very real downside.
Kurt, that was very helpful context. A lot of open questions indeed, and the conversation will continue on the federal level. Though, Janine, to welcome you into the conversation, just given the heightened nature of politics and the role that data centers may potentially play in this November's elections, as Kurt had outlined for us, Janine, can you take a few moments here to dig a bit deeper into how state and local government municipal issuers may be impacted by data centers looking ahead?
Certainly. As folks are well aware, the municipal market is inextricably linked to the various levels of politics at the federal, state, and local levels, and that's given the shared objective of providing essential public services to residents nationwide. Now, that said, the federal government only controls some policy levers with regards to data center projects, with state and local governments controlling most of the relevant decisions here. Now, the uptick in public opposition more recently, however, has brought political pressures to the forefront of state and local governments' day-to-day operations. In response to this opposition, they're increasingly creating new policies or reevaluating existing ones as to whether data centers' demands on electricity, transmission, water, and public infrastructure, and the tax incentives often used to attract them, are appropriately balanced against the economic benefits that they generate. So what do I mean by governments creating new policies or reevaluating their existing ones? At a high level, each jurisdiction has its own way of enticing economic activity based upon its taxing structure, and that includes various types of incentives in an attempt to attract data centers to a region in exchange for increased economic activity. Now, some governments are looking to better define these rules of the road as they balance the sector's benefits with its potential costs into the future. This makes permitting decisions, cost allocation frameworks, and incentive programs increasingly more important determinants of where future data capacity is built. So how are they doing this? As many folks saw, New York recently became the first state to impose a one-year moratorium on new data center construction, with lawmakers in five other states considering similar moratorium-like pauses. Alternatively, there's an increasing number of states instead adopting a more regulatory-driven approach that places stipulations on future development. Now, governments cite that these pauses will allow them more time to perform improved due diligence. In addition, some believe that they may find that lessons from existing data center developments, including their effects on natural resources, may even strengthen the bargaining position of both state and local governments seeking to capture greater economic value from future projects. Notably, states both in support and in opposition are commonly seeking a broad emphasis of ratepayer protections and improved permitting standards. Now, with all of that said, municipal bonds have historically funded 75% of the nation's infrastructure needs over the last 100 years. We expect that trend to continue, with the sector remaining an important tax-advantaged financing tool for the next phase of the AI build-out. And that's by helping fund transmission lines, water treatment plants, substations, and other infrastructure that private AI facilities depend on. With this next phase of expansion, we expect increased bond issuance for electric, water, sewer, and transmission infrastructure purposes.
In consideration of political factors, and we've heard from Kurt on the federal level, Janine just shared with us the implications on the state and local levels. What are we actually seeing, Jay, on the ground at utilities and regional transmission organizations, or RTOs?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Dan, and I'll expand a little bit on Kurt and Janine's comments. But, you know, Kurt said something really important that we have to keep in mind. He said many things that were really important. But one thing that stood out to me was we do believe this AI data center build-out will continue. The terms are changing, and certainly the sort of attribution of benefits, certainly at the local level, will likely shift and change. Those may be actually moving locally, or they actually may be moving geographically. But the reality is we think this will continue to go forward. But, you know, the what we're seeing is real. You know, Janine talked about the New York State moratorium that was adopted on July 14th. More recently, we've had sort of a mandate by the Texas governor to audit all of the data center interconnection requests. Texas probably has more of those than anywhere. They would equate to almost five times the current peak load of electricity demand. That occurred on the 3rd of August. And then on the 18th of August, the Pennsylvania governor set out strict guidelines that data centers have to follow. Both of these governors are up for re-election, so I do think you have to continue, as both Kurt and Janine pointed out, to look at this through a political prism. But as both of them also pointed out, that we want to call this a little bit of politics, we have to admit the polls that Kurt cited. These are real people reacting to real issues. And as Tip O'Neill used to say, all politics are local. So this is really a very, very local issue. When we look at the utilities and sort of the RTOs, these are the people on the front line that data centers are contacting before they begin construction to say, I want power. And keep in mind, again, these power figures are just enormous. There's nothing like I've seen in my, you know, greater than 30-year career. A data center can often be asking for a gigawatt or 1,000 megawatts of power. In many places in the U.S., that's larger than a single power plant for a single use. So these are very, very large users of power and require a lot of infrastructure. A lot of these companies are willing to pay the full freight on those improvements and the necessary new supply, but regulation, you have to remember the utility business, the electricity business is a highly regulated business at both the federal and the state level, and utilities operate under a, you know, sort of civil obligation to serve, so they have no incentive to just hook up a large new customer and sort of hope that the supply will be there. So those are some issues I think to keep in mind as we think about this. The utility and sort of independent power producer sort of frontline impact really varies on where you are. You know, the independent power producers who are operating a lot in Texas and PJM. PJM is the northeastern quadrant of the U.S. That is the regional transmission organization, or RTO, that sort of looks over that area. And those are both areas where regulation, or at least politics, are front and center. And so there is a lot of investor angst over just how fast things are going to move. We've been moving somewhat slowly, particularly in the Northeast. I would say we're about to break that dam, probably, you know, close to or shortly after the midterm elections, where we'll start to see power agreements signed in significant size. But that will require adding new capacity and pledges, legally binding agreements by hyperscalers to pay their full freight. So essentially paying to assure that there is no, you know, creep higher in power bills associated with their demand to other customers in the region. So I'd say by and large in those regions, we're seeing, you know, sort of things moving slowly. At the broader utility, the regulated space, you know, in the Southeast, for example, you know, we see actually more hyperscale agreements sort of moving forward there. In certain parts of the West, we see it too. As Kurt pointed out, there's a lot of state level, you know, discussions around, around limits on data centers. But I would say even more than that is the, you know, local and municipality restrictions. Though some are setting guidelines and trying to waive in additional data centers. So this really depends. The lens you look through has to be, you know, what do we see occurring? One of the big trends we expect is that this behind the meter or some of these temporary or mobile power solutions are going to get or benefit from this this activity, where you see data centers wanting to move forward. And I think my colleague Nathaniel will talk about some of the impacts that can be downstream. But if you assume, as Kurt said, that these data centers are going to move forward, they need power. Buying a very large chip and constructing a data center and then not having power for it is sort of the definition of a challenge. So they'll want power, and I think some of the temporary power folks will be some of the net winners in the very, very near term. But as Kurt said, and I think we have to ground this, we do think these AI data centers will be built. The demand for electricity will occur. Municipalities and local utilities, the customers thereof, will see the benefit of it, we believe, increasingly, and that will allow a lot of this to move forward. So there's a fair amount of regulatory angst out there and investor angst, I would say, around utilities and IPPs, as well as some of these behind-the-meter providers. But if we're right and sort of politics are an underlying issue here, as we clear through the midterms, we'll probably see the cacophony of this begin to dim a little bit in concert with real changes to what we're seeing as the local benefits of data centers to local customers.
From hearing that, the regulatory checkpoints to get past, to get these data centers up and running, quite eye-opening. So with that, as you alluded to, Jay, let's bring Nathaniel into the conversation to talk about how these data centers are constructed. Nathaniel, when you think about it, so many companies are involved in building data centers. You have chip makers, construction contractors, electrical equipment, liquid cooling. The list seems to go on. How might changes, Nathaniel, to the pace or location of data center construction impact the growth trajectory for the pool of investable participants?
Thanks, Dan. I think this is a terrific question, because when you read the headlines about the pace of data center construction, there are so many different ways to measure it. and the timelines and the implementation, it can be a little bit like mixing apples and oranges sometimes. So it's good to step back and break apart some of these categories to see where there might be some vulnerabilities and where we should be less worried. So if you just read the news flow, you might think we're about to be drowning in a sea of data centers imminently. But in actuality, the constraint weighing on data center construction times today is not necessarily political pushback. It's much more about the physical infrastructure, the supply of electricity, the years it takes to receive power generating equipment, shortages of medium and high voltage equipment, the dearth of qualified electricians, and more. On the ground level, I'd say the suppliers and the customers are still living in a world of scarcity. Hyperscalers want more compute, not less. They're demanding more power, not less. They'll consider all available options to get to market faster. And frankly, even with new entrants, there just aren't that many companies that can provide the equipment and the labor that's needed at the scale and level of quality that's needed. So I would say point number one is that the data center operators are already unable to build anywhere near the amount of capacity they want, and they struggle to spend the massive amount of CapEx they've committed. The second point I'd make is that I haven't encountered anyone in the industry who thinks all the data centers that have been announced will be built. Depending on the sources or the definitions you choose, there's something like 400 gigawatts of data center announcements floating out there. You know, again, just 1 gigawatt can power 1 million American homes. But that likely includes a lot of double counting, a lot of comparison shopping, a lot of let's just throw in an application and see where there might be an opportunity. So we can say with very high confidence that the true investable opportunity is already significantly lower than that. And even when we trim this down to projects that could realistically get permits and power and equipment, you know, we would still haircut that by a substantial amount. So in our report, we land at 90 gigawatts of power demand from data centers by the end of the decade. And again, just to put that number in perspective, in 2024, the U.S. only built 7 gigawatts total. Last year, we built 14. So again, construction rates are what really struggle to keep up. And maybe with that as the baseline, you know, shifting the perspective from one of kind of this unbound oversupply that seems to be out the narrative out there to one of physical constraint, you know, there may be some pressure on the leading edge of new project timelines. So, you know, worth breaking apart how that might affect the various supply chain participants you mentioned. Certainly the biggest cost by far to build a data center is the IT equipment. This is the servers, the networking, the storage that make up about 80% of data center cost. That truly is the leading edge. And the tech companies that play here are selling products that are generations ahead of what's being installed today. If there is a wobble somewhere, it could be that the pace of AI chip sales suggests that physical data center availability probably needs to be much higher than what we're assuming from the infrastructure side. Another 10-ish percent of the cost is just building the physical shell of the facility. Think engineering fees, construction contractors, installation. Frankly, this is way behind. These are super complex projects, requires very specialized labor. This is not your neighborhood electrician. There's plenty of work to go around, and I don't think the companies working on that mind so much if the leading edge slows down a bit. And then finally, you have the remaining 10%, the companies that provide equipment that powers and cools the data center. Here, it's a little bit more nuanced. You know, these companies have visibility to what demand looks like on the leading edge because they're at the table with the customers and the data center designers. But they're also delivering on previously ordered equipment, and they book revenue when the construction site is ready to receive it. So those stocks can often trade on the pace of new orders, which have the potential to be delayed if customers are hitting the pause button for any reason. But they're going to keep delivering on their sizable backlogs and likely continue compounding earnings nicely for some time, irrespective of the political environment. So, you know, again, a very nuanced discussion. But I think the key takeaway is that from an investment perspective, we're already not counting on anything near the amount of data center announcements out there to support strong growth for the supply chain, and perhaps some thinning of the speculative herd might actually be a much-needed de-risking.
Barry, from hearing that, as Nathaniel pointed out, these are very complex, layered, costly projects. Capital is not necessarily a constraint on data center development. So, Barry, what have you picked up on from a lending perspective regarding the financing of data centers? What kind of appetite is out there?
Yeah, so Dan, there's been strong appetite out there, and one of the recent developments has been in the form of data center bonds. So these are more asset-backed securities that have come into both the investment grade and high-yield bond markets. The size is still small in relation to these respective indices, about $40 billion in high yield and $60 billion in investment grade. But they are a growing and innovative component of the AI infrastructure build-out. And in terms of the risks associated with these instruments, there are certainly construction, completion risks, things like power availability, the operating economics, who the tenant might be, what's the debt pay down or amortization schedule. But, Reuters recently also ran a story pointing out that lenders are scrutinizing data center financing as community opposition builds. So this concept of, just community acceptance, I think, is also becoming an increasingly, a factor and a risk assessment that lenders are taking note of. I would make a distinction, though, in terms of data center bond issues. These are issues where use of proceeds are come all at once, versus direct lending by banks, where there might be periodic draws on the funds, where in this case, the more direct lending channel can put some hurdles in place to make sure that the process, the approval is going okay. But in terms of the data center bond deals, they really have been more focused on major investment grade hyperscalers, as the tenants. They're really focused on locations that have been a bit more supportive, for the building. And, they really are, as I mentioned, I think, kind of an innovative part of the market. When you think about, for example, in the high yield market this year, there's been about 18 deals that have totaled $40 billion. 11 of them have had these high quality, investment grade, well-known hyperscalers as the major tenant. And you pick up a spread, because of the various other risks associated with the security. There is about 125 basis point spread pickup over the bonds that you would otherwise get, in these companies. The structure is generally about a 5-year maturity, but callable in 2 years, which corresponds to about the point when the data centers become operational. So you could have a situation where the construction risk dissipates at that 2-year mark, so the security, could lessen in terms of certain risk factors associated with it, and there could even be potential for a credit rating upgrade of the instrument. So in any case, just goes to show you kind of the innovation that, has taken place as it relates to the financing environment this year. It is expected to grow and become a larger component of both the high yield and investment grade market. Still, though, probably not an influential weight that will impact the overall, performance materially, but something that, as investors kind of expands the opportunity set within each asset class and, provides managers additional ability, to find, more appealing opportunities, assuming that they're comfortable with the associated level of risk. So, bottom line is that, capital, it hasn't been a constraint. We don't foresee it being a constraint. Obviously, capital is going to flow more freely to, areas where there's going to be, kind of strong underlying tenants or, better structures on the instruments. And certainly, as far as the community acceptance goes, anything that, helps a smoother process along the way, I think would also, be a factor to consider for capital allocators.
Well, Barry, Nathaniel, Jay, Janine, Kurt, thank you all for dropping by Top of the Morning today to talk about this top of mind and quickly evolving topic of data center build-out and the regulatory landscape. This conversation will indeed continue, so do look forward to having follow-up conversations with you all. Though in the meantime, again to you, our listeners and our clients tuning in, please be sure to reference the report which we have been talking about on today's episode. That title again, The Investment Implications of Data Center Regulation, which is available for you now on the website ubs.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, please be sure to reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of the report directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus for a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS. Please visit our website at ubs.com/cio-disclaimer.